download from Triple J.
For more music, current affairs, comedy and culture, triplej.net.au.
And now,
all this week on Triple J, we're getting behind the wheel. And why should that stop in Science Hour? Dr. Carl is joining us as he does every Thursday morning after 11. And we're going to be talking the science of driving, of drivers, of cars. Can I say, Dr. Carl, already the lines are burning up.
Burning.
With lots of questions. So if you've got a question for Dr. Carl that relates to driving or drivers, anything on the road, behind the wheel, give us a buzz right now, 1300 055 36. Actually got a couple of copies of our awesome new Triple J magazine. 360 is our cover star. You can't miss it. He's a man without a top on and lots of tattoos. And that magazine could be in your hands if you ask us an awesome science question about driving. You know a little bit about the science of driving because you've long been an ambassador, I guess, for taking care on the roads, haven't you, in New South Wales? And also you test drive four-wheel drives all the time, Dr.
I do. I've been through 15 of the 17 deserts in Australia. And with regard to driving when you're tired, while there are no laws against driving when you're tired, and I don't think there should be, nevertheless, when you are tired, your performance is as bad as if you are drunk.
Wow.
There are laws against driving when you're drunk. I've had the terrible experience when I was a taxi driver of being in the middle of Sydney at King's Cross in winter when the taxi driving is hard on a Tuesday night when it's very hard. And I have one memory when I was in a queue of taxis at about 2 o'clock in the morning, about half a kilometre long. And my next memory is that I have a passenger with me in a car and we're about 10 kilometres away on Canterbury Road. And I remember nothing in between.
Wow.
And I think what saved me, which is a very bad thing to do and you shouldn't do this, is the fact that very early on, when I was a taxi driver, I realised that you can either be an amateur driver or a professional driver. And if you're a professional driver, you just do certain things differently. Like you do not want to end up killing people, doing bad things, going off the road. And every time you change lanes, you put on a blinker. Even if you intellectually know that at 2 o'clock in the morning there's nobody around, you do that so that you program it into your memory, into your muscle memory. So one night when you are tired, you'll do it automatically. You build up good habits. There is no advantage in having bad habits when you're driving because you can kill people. And I used to see this as a doctor when I was working in the emergency in the hospital. When people do bad things when they're driving to their friends in the car with them or somebody in another car, they don't get over it for years and years. It really stuffs them around.
It's often not until you've had an accident that you realise how easy it is to happen and how important it is to be focusing on driving, not texting, indicating, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, okay, here's my whinge. People who do not know how to use the foot brake or the handbrake, and when there's a bit of a hill and you're behind them at the lights, they roll back a metre or so. And 2 weeks ago, somebody rolled back a metre on me and I beeped them gently saying, hey, you're about to run into me. And they waved apologetically, putting their hand in the air and there was a smartphone in their hand.
Oh, God.
Their head then bent down and they did it the second time. And when they did it the third time, I beeped them the third time. And they could not keep their foot on the foot brake and they wouldn't use a handbrake because they had to text. And yet they were running the risk of causing $1,000 worth of damage to the car behind them, which was me. Ah, whinge, end of whinge. Let's now think positive. Share the love.
We're going to talk about the science of driving today, drivers and driving. We've got a whole bunch of people calling us up. Be one of them. 1300 055 36 is the number to buzz. Logan in Armidale is the first cab off the rank. Pardon the pun.
Oh, funny girl.
Logan, what's your question for Dr. Carl?
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
The other day, me and my friend, we were driving back from Sydney to Newcastle. And we've gone about 90 because I'm a peep later and that's the limit for me. And all of a sudden, my back windscreen just exploded and shattered. And it still like retained like its shape, but it was just completely obliterated.
Wow. So did it break up into those little granules, say the size of your thumbnail?
Yeah.
So it maintained its structural integrity. It didn't have a hole in it, but it was virtually opaque. It was very, very difficult to see through.
Yeah, and when we stopped, when we stood near it, we could just hear it cracking even more and see little lines forming.
Okay. In the old days, the glass in a car window was simply regular house glass. And if it broke, in a car accident. There'd be shards of glass going everywhere and people got tremendous damage. And then in the early 1900s, around 1907 in France, a chemist dropped a beaker onto the ground and it shattered, a glass beaker, but it maintained its shape. And he couldn't understand why. And he went looking and he discovered the people in the laboratory who'd been working before had been working with a particular chemical which they poured out but which left a tiny invisible coating on the inside of the glass. And that kept the broken glass together. So now the glass has multiple layers with this plastic stuff in between holding it together. But then they've gone one stage further. The glass is also a structural member of the car. Back in the middle 1990s, there was one popular Australian car, which if you got the car and turned it upside down in a crane, turned upside down and very gently lowered it on its roof. So now the car's weight, instead of being held by the four tyres, was being held by the roof. If you did not have the glass in the front and rear windows, it would squash flat and kill everybody inside if there was somebody inside. But if you had the glass, the glass was a structural member of the car with structural integrity, and the car would now support 1.5 times its own weight. Nowadays, the glass is a stressed member of the car. And so it's under stress. And you were unlucky that it popped. Now, it could be that a little tiny bit of stone or something off the road flew around and hit it and set off a stress fracture, and then it just spread. You said it was on the back of the car. Sometimes you can have something coming from a car overtaking you because you were a P-plater and it could have done it. There are certain things that you can throw against the car window, which I will not describe on air, which you can throw against the car window and it just shatters. And I was at a mate's car yard and he said, "You seen this trick?" And he got this thing and he did it and blow me down. I got pretty good at breaking car windows by the end of it.
In a car yard.
In a wrecking yard.
Yes.
Not a new car yard. You don't want to spread this knowledge out.
Must have been a surprise for you, Logan.
It was quite random.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, mate.
Thank you.
See you later. Sam's calling in from Wagga. We were talking earlier about the dangerousness of being asleep or sleepy when you're driving. You've got a question relating to that, Sam.
Yeah, I do. I was just wondering why when we're driving or even when we're a passenger, why we get so tired.
You tend to get more tired as a passenger than as a driver, but it does happen to you as a driver. And they do have that campaign, which is the Stop, Revive, Survive. And I should point out that I was the face of that campaign for a while because I thought it was a good thing. Part of the reason you get tired is that on one hand, you've got to put in attention. You've got to look out for the car that might pop up in front of you, behind you, or to the side. At the same time, you've got relatively little stimulus coming in. Mm. It's not like you're watching a TV show and then there's this happening and then there's that happening and then the guys come out of the TV and then they eat the heart of the vampires and then the moon comes over and then the werewolves come out. But it's just the same road unrolling in front of you. So you've got a situation where you have to give lots of attention and there's relatively little change in environment coming in. And so as a result, you take the natural thing, which is just to go to sleep.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? I always get really tired on long road trips. You've got to find things to keep you awake. Thanks so much for the call, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Dr. Sam.
Warwick's calling in from Belmont this morning. Hi, Warwick.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. What's your question?
Mine's a bit of a complaint, I guess, but I've turned it into a psychology question. Why when drivers are going below the speed limit and they hit overtaking lanes, they all speed up? And I ask that because I drive a very gutless van, and there's no way I can overtake anyone when I hit overtaking lanes because of that reason.
Ah, well, to use the Australian vernacular, your van is so gutless that it would not, and I quote, it could not pull your granny off a dunny, unquote.
Oh.
Well, yeah, you could use that if you want.
Oh. Now, can you explain that for... Okay. You see, the trouble is overseas listeners on a podcast won't know what a dunny is. It's a toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
We'll all learn something.
Yeah, okay. Right. why do they do it? Because they're poorly trained. I was driving in Germany when I was going off to see the Large Hadron Collider. And so you're buzzing along and I was doing up to 200 Ks in the almost fast lane on the Autobahn. And then off on the side, some person would be coming in to merge in the traffic off a side road. You know, they'd be bleeding onto the Autobahn. Everybody would see them and then everybody would move over one into the fast lane, move across one towards the fast lane to make room for them. In Australia, it's, mate, what do you bloody think you're doing trying to get into my lane? rack off hairy legs, and people will not let people in. Driving training program is not as good as it is in Germany. I love driving in Germany because everybody actually thought, I am driving a car, I am paying attention. I'm not texting, I'm not talking to the family, danger of not paying attention to driving, but everybody really paid attention to their driving. Whereas here it's sort of like, oh, man, I've got to text, man. I've got to tell him what I had for coffee this morning.
I think there's a difference between driving and not understanding that you're sharing the road with hundreds of other people and not just driving and taking care of your own needs, which I feel like...
So your answer is people are stupid.
No, the training program in Germany, it costs several thousand dollars to get a license, and you have to be able to drive in all conditions, including on an autobahn in the dark, and you have to write an essay on the environmental impact of the car and be able to change a tyre. So many people today cannot even change the tyre on their car.
All right, so it's about education. That's an interesting question. Thanks so much for the call, Warwick.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
If you've been living under a rock for the last how many years? Many, many years. Dr. Carl joins us every Thursday to talk science for 1 hour every week, and we love your questions. If you ever miss out on it, don't forget you can jump on and download the podcast totally free, triplej.net.au. Just click on podcasts at the top of that page and you can get an hour of science minus the songs delivered to your MP3 player for free. We're doing it live now, though. Give us a buzz if you've got a question. 1-300-055-36. Talking science and specifically the science of driving and drivers. Paul in Bendigo's got a great question. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, how you going?
Great. What's your question?
G'day, Dr. Carl, too. I've been listening to you for a long time. Very pleased to speak with you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Paul. Welcome.
Thank you. Now, imagine you've got a very long tunnel, and it's a circular tunnel, and you take a car, a racing car, with, you know how they've got the spoilers and the body kits so that they suck down, they've got a lot of downforce when they get up to high speeds. Imagine you were driving down that tunnel in one of those cars. Would you be able to then drive up the wall and drive on the ceiling, on the roof of that tunnel?
Yes. I wrote about this in one of my previous books. I can't remember which one it was. But the downforce generated by these cars at around 160 to 200 kilometres per hour is equal to the weight of the car. Why do they have so much downforce? Because the engines are so powerful that if they were to accelerate at full power, they would spin the wheels. So you have to have more downforce on the car so the wheels don't spin, so that way they can keep on applying power to the ground and keep on accelerating. And it's around 160 to 200 kilometres per hour. I would like to think that one day Top Gear would do it if they haven't already done it. Same for our good friends in Mythbusters. So what you would need would be a Formula One car, which generates lots of downforce, and a long tunnel, and you'd need to have gently ramping sides. And a very clever, brave driver like James Cameron when he went down by himself 11 kilometres down in an untried vehicle all the way down to the bottom of the ocean. But so you'd want to have a gentle ramp so you can start off on the flat and then bring one wheels on the side up onto the side of the ramp, and then as you keep on accelerating, you could end up theoretically drive upside down in a tunnel, providing you keep your speed over 200 kilometres per hour.
Oh, that's fast.
Now, you've got two problems. One is lubrication to the engine. Well, they have what is called a dry sump. So oil is scavenged, brought into a container and then pumped through, and then you need to have a way of making sure that the fuel didn't run out either while you're upside down. It'd be an interesting experiment. Go for a Top Gear or Mythbusters.
Thanks so much for the call, Paul.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
See you later. David's calling in from St Kilda today. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question?
Basically, I've got a vehicle with a diesel engine, and when you start a diesel engine, you have to wait for the glow plug light to go out before you can turn the engine on. But I want to know that if I want to leave the vehicle stationary just to listen to the radio, whether once the glow plug light's gone out, the battery's still going to continue sending a volt to the glow plugs and they might burn out or anything like that.
Ah, now, I've driven some model. Now, firstly, the glow plug, with a car petrol engine, what you do is you get your petrol air mixture, roughly, 15 to 1 or something. So one part of petrol, 15 parts of air. I think it's 15 to 1. I can't remember the exact stoichiometric ratio. Mm. And then you compress it by about, say, 10 to 1. So you get it and you compress this petrol air mixture way down, and then you put a spark into it from a spark plug, and then it fires, expands, motion happens, back wheels turn. In a diesel engine, you do not need the spark plug because you compress it up to 20 to 1. And in the same way that when you pump up a bicycle tire with a hand pump, the pump gets warm. Well, when you compress the diesel air mixture up to 20 to 1, it gets hot enough to ignite by itself. So therefore, you need what's called a glow plug when the engine is cold, just to kick it over. Now, my understanding is that you need the glow plug in all diesel engines, but I've driven some older diesel vehicles where you had to actually wait for the full 5 seconds. And I've driven some new diesel vehicles where you just turn the engine on and it just goes. How do they do that? But my understanding would be, in your particular case, with regard to the glow plug, that when the light goes off, it is not feeding electricity to the glow plug. It only needs it for those brief seconds just to get the diesel engine started. Then after that, it just sits there doing nothing.
Yeah, because I wondered if I was, when in vehicle was stationary, say we're working outside, I want the radio on, whether I was doing any damage to the glow plug by giving it too much volt when the vehicle isn't actually moving.
I think you're safe on that. Now, look, if somebody could explain to us how come the modern cars don't seem to need a glow plug, or maybe they've just got a different system where it heats up very quickly, the answer, please ring in, and the magic number is
1300 055 536, or you can tweet Dr. Carl on Twitter, DOCTORKARL. Thanks, David.
Thanks very much.
And a further thing, Bron, on our Twitter homepage, Dr. Carl, DOCTORKARL. He's done it. You retweeted it?
No, I just said it.
You said it. You're so wonderful. Bron, or PuddleDuck24, has retweeted when Top Gear did running the car upside down.
Oh, they've done it.
They've done it in a tunnel, apparently.
Wow.
So just check out the video.
Yeah, it'll be online somewhere.
Somewhere.
Let's head to the Bass Coast. Andrew's on the line. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, morning, guys. Andrew. Morning, Dr. Carl.
Good morning.
My question relates to the eyes and driving. I mean, I'm a truck driver, wide vehicles and things, to simplify it, I guess. Would people that continually drive wide vehicles and things, would their nerves in the eyes, i.e. the optic eyes or their peripheral vision, be better than what your average person is that just drives a normal vehicle?
Yes, I think you would train it. The way that vision works is as follows. Even though you have two eyes and you've got a retina covering virtually all of the inside of each eye, and the retina turns light into electricity, the bit that you're focusing on, the bit that you improve, that you're concentrating on and sending signals to the brain and processing most of, is an area the size of your thumbnail held at arm's length. So if you get stretch your arm out and put your thumb up, that's the only bit of outside reality that you see sharp in focus in 3D. Everything else, you scanned over quickly and it's just sitting there as a virtual memory, but you're not really seeing what's going on there. So how do you tell that stuff is moving? Because there are special receptors in your eye that pick up if something moves, like a fly flies across your field of view, or a car suddenly pops up way over in your external rear view mirror and it's heading into your blind spot, and then it vanishes because it's in your blind spot. So I would be willing to bet that in the same way that in London, the taxi drivers who have to train for a test called the knowledge, where they have to know every single street in London, they then grow the part of their brain associated with processing it bigger. In the same way, truck drivers would almost certainly, but I haven't read a study on it, would grow the part of their brain bigger which is associated with processing peripheral vision. And by the way, just a little, this is not a whinge, this is for everybody who has to deal with truck drivers. They can't stop as fast as you can. Do not pull in front of a truck and then jam on your brakes just to beat them into traffic lights.
Agreed.
For God's sakes.
Well, it just goes to show that some truck drivers do have brains.
And look, by the way, I just suddenly realised then, you've touched across something deeply philosophical, because you're not just talking about let's just do God's work and burn hydrocarbons. You're touching upon something deep, because the road movie, the road story goes back to Ulysses and Homer, where people find themselves by going on the road, and when they come back, they have discovered home for the first time.
Wow.
We are reaching a higher plane of consciousness here.
We really are. Who knew science could take us there? Thanks so much for the call, Andrew.
Thank you, Dr. Andrew. And so hopefully nobody will pull in front of you and jam on the brakes.
It's true.
No, I'm on site today. Thanks very much.
Good on you, mate. We're talking science, talking the science of driving and drivers. If you've got a question, give us a buzz. We're going to get to some more of them after this. 1300 055 536.
And I have an answer here with regard to how come you needed glow plugs in the older diesel engines, but tend not to need them now. Thank you very much, Mr. Fiddy Maloney. And he says that I think that the newer common rail engines run at much higher fuel pressures for the diesel, making it more volatile, hence decreasing the need for glow plugs. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your answers for us, either on text or Twitter. We're always appreciating them. Let's jump into some more calls now. 1300 055 36 if you've got one. Joel in Albury does. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how you going?
Great. What's your question?
Look, I had a brother who was in a car accident about six or so weeks ago. He was driving out on a long straight country road. He ran into a tree. He was doing the speed limit and he actually survived the accident. But he actually fell asleep at the wheel. Now, the doctors, when we got down to the hospital in Melbourne, they mentioned to us one of the primary reasons he's actually still alive is because he was actually asleep and not awake when he actually had the impact. So I'm curious to know why it is that when you are asleep that you've got a higher chance of surviving an accident.
I've always been confused about that. I've heard it a lot. Was he wearing a seatbelt at the time?
He was wearing a seatbelt.
I think that would be the main factor that saved him.
Yeah, no, I figured that.
And I've spoken with the Mercedes engineers with regard to the terrible death of Princess Diana.
Yep.
And it's a habit among the royals that they tend not to wear seatbelts because they think they're above the law of the land. However, they're not above the laws of physics, and the Mercedes engineers told me that had she been wearing a seatbelt in the car that she was in, she almost certainly would have survived.
Mm. Okay.
Now, what kills you in an impact is the tearing apart of blood vessels from what they're joined to, or compression of internal organs, once again causing blood vessels to be torn apart. So to pick of an easy example, you got this thing the size of two clenched fists, the heart.
Yep.
And it pumps 5 litres of blood every minute, and it pumps it out through a pipe called the aorta, which is roughly the diameter of your thumb. When you stop suddenly at, say, 10, 20 or 30 or 40 Gs, and 40 Gs seems to be the maximum that anybody can survive, and that's if you're a really fit person like a Formula One driver, and they've survived 40 Gs, where a 70-kilogram body suddenly weighs 2.8 tonnes.
Wow.
So the heart moves and the aorta does not.
Okay.
When suddenly the heart, instead of weighing 100 grams, weighs 400 grams, 4 kilograms, and it gets torn loose from the aorta, and so the heart is pumping blood into your chest cavity. That's what kills you. I really don't see how, with regard to the death versus non-death issue, whether you're stiff or floppy as well-boiled spaghetti makes a lot of difference. But I'm happy to be proven wrong. And if somebody can point me, steer me at some sort of peer-reviewed paper via the Twitter thing from automotive engineering or emergency medicine journals, I'd love to read it.
It's a good question. Thanks for the call, Joel, and good to hear your brother's doing okay.
Yeah, better than
Thank you very much.
Bede's on the line from Penrith this morning. Hi, Bede.
Hi, Bede.
Hi, Dr. Carl. Hi, Dr. Van.
Dr. Bede, welcome. What's your question?
It's sort of in regards to air conditioning of cars. I saw in a very informative Current Affairs show a couple of weeks ago about, I don't know if it's the reverse cycle setting on the air conditioning or the one that pumps the same air back through the car.
Mm-hmm.
But having that on for too long with the windows closed can lead to drowsiness and, in some severe cases, I guess, drivers passing out from inhaling too much CO2. I just wondered if you could confirm that and the science a little bit more.
Well, firstly, I wouldn't necessarily trust the science behind the four corners. Sorry, I would trust four corners, but I wouldn't trust most of the other current affairs shows. For example, what they were saying recently about the PIP breast implants, if you look at Media Watch, you'll see how they selectively edited the shows to make out that these breast implants are so toxic that they'll kill you within a second and you should have them out right now. And that's not as simple as that. Did they measure in the show? So with regard to aircon in the car, you've got two options. One is that air comes into the car. It is then conditioned. That means that they adjust the humidity and the temperature to be comfortable, and then it goes out. And the other system is that it goes around and around and around, and your air conditioning doesn't work as hard, but you're breathing the same air. There's a little bit of a bleed-off, and it's variable how much this bleed-off is, so you're not breathing the same air totally. And did they measure the carbon dioxide, and did the carbon dioxide rise significantly? Did they have a number on it?
I'm pretty sure, I can't remember what they sort of measured it in, but they had some sort of gizmo in there that was measuring the CO2, I'm pretty sure, and
saying how quickly it rose in such a short amount of time.
It did. They did measure it.
Yeah.
Okay, because straight away you've got a variability in cars. So you've got the recycling or recirculation set on in the aircon. So we normally put the recirculation on when we go through some of the smelly tunnels, right? That's a good thing to do, then turned off again. Mm. But cars, I thought, and I'm ignorant of this, I thought they were designed that even if you had them on recirc, they still had some sort of bleed. There was still some fresh air coming in, some of the old air going out to stop this happening. And you said that they found some cars on which the carbon dioxide level went up.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't test, several models or anything, but what they were using was, whatever they were measuring it with was showing a very significant rise in, I think, even in within a 5-minute period sort of thing.
Look, I'd have to watch the show and then see the numbers that they were getting. I can't comment any further on that. I've driven for weeks with the car on recirculating and not felt tired.
Mm.
I've driven on long drives of 5 hours with the car on recirculating and haven't felt tired.
Mm.
So I'd need to know more about it.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bede.
Thank you.
I'll see if I can link the story to your blog or something.
Yeah, Twitter.
Twitter. Oh, on
you're
Dr.
so clever.
Tweet us at Dr. Carl.
You're so clever.
He would love that. He loves getting messages.
All right.
Thanks, Bede. Right. We've got Joseph on the line. He's actually on the road right now. Hopefully he pulled over somewhere. Hi, Joseph.
I'm on hands-free.
Hands-free.
Long time listener. First time caller. I wear polarised lenses and do a lot of driving, but I've noticed that when you look through the windscreen, you get like a three-dimensional kind of haze on the windscreen.
Yes.
Or if I'm looking at another car, as I've pulled up behind a car at lights, and it looked like a golf ball dimple across their back glass.
Yep.
What's going on there?
Well, firstly, you're picking up via the polarized glasses the stress patterns in the glass. If you were to look at a window in a house, there are no embedded stresses or residual stresses. It is not a structural element of the house. Whereas in the car, there are stresses in it, and you're seeing those stresses. To explain exactly how polarized glasses show that is beyond the scope of this radio show. And secondly, and I'm guilty of this myself, but increasingly less and less, even though you're on hands-free phone, you are driving as badly as if you are drunk.
So we should keep going.
So you should pull over at the side of the road.
Yeah.
Because what you're trying to do is concentrate on what we're saying in our conversation, and you're not getting the visual feedback where I'm leaning forward, leaning back, and every now and then you sort of go, grunt, because we're on a radio circuit that accepts it one way or the other.
So we're going to let you get back to the radio, to the road. Thanks so much for the call, Joseph.
Thank you.
Oh, we liked that.
He thought that was cool.
That's hilarious. Good on you, Jack. Jack's on the line from Melbourne with a very interesting scientific question about the future. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Dr. Jack. Welcome.
How's it going, Doctor?
Good. What's your question?
Just pulling over. Give me a second.
Legend.
I reckon he deserves a Triple J mag.
I think that he does, because he's listened to what you've said. He's taken on board your advice.
Our advice.
And, Jack, we'll send you out a Triple J magazine, which just came out yesterday with 360 on the cover. Does that sound
so
good
cool,
to you?
Man.
That'd be awesome.
You haven't even asked the question yet. What's your question?
Just quickly, firstly, on what you guys were saying about being limp and being rigid in an accident. I actually got run over by a car off my skateboard probably about 18 months ago. I'd fallen off and knocked myself out, and the doctor told me that if I wasn't limp, I'd be dead.
I want to find the science behind that.
He didn't tell me why, and he didn't give me... He just said if I wasn't knocked out and unconscious, that I'd most likely... The car would have... Because it ran over the back of me. The wheels ran over my back. He said that it would have crushed my chest, my ribs and my heart into my chest.
I need to know more about this. I need to talk with an emergency medicine person. But look, thank you for getting you started on this one, because this is something that we'll have an answer to one day soon, I hope.
What's your question for Dr. Carl, Jack?
My question is, sort of like with today's technological advancements and sort of maybe the hunt for ultimate safety, is it beyond the realms of possibility that one day we could have cars that know its surroundings so well that it knows the speed limit of which it is on, or that the speed, like the traffic lights it's coming up to, and then therefore not allowing its driver to disobey the law?
The Google car already does that. There's a competition every year. in the overall hunt, not just for better driving, but for artificial intelligence. And the subset of that is to have a car which can drive itself. And many people join this competition, and I think Google is one of the many cars. So I'm just mentioning Google, but there were other cars in it. And these cars drive themselves.
Yeah.
They know what the speed limits are as they go along. They read it off the side of the road. They do interpretation of that image, and they slow down. They also are now working towards taking more of the car driving ability away from the driver because they tend not to concentrate so much, and putting it in the hands of the electronics. Mind you, you hope that the system doesn't crash or go down, or you get flying pizza wheel or the blue screen of death. But yeah, that technology already exists today.
Well, that's good. Thanks. Do you think it would be mass produced one day? Like,
we're heading further down that pathway. We're already heading for different fuels. So we're heading for the electric car. And the advantage of the electric car is that it can be a mobile storage system, so it can feed power into the grid when it's needed, and it can suck excess power out when you're producing it and then to feed it back in when you don't need it.
Wow. Thanks so much for the call, Jack.
No, thanks. All good.
Good on you, mate. And we've got time for a few more callers on 1300 055 36. Terry's calling in from Kempsey this morning. Hi, Terry.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Great. What's your question?
My question is, I've just been diagnosed with a degenerative back disease, which I have to have cortisone shots and steroid shots for. I was just wondering if that would affect my driving at all.
Ah, there's two sorts of steroids. There's the ones that build up the muscles, and then there's the other sorts, which you're having now. And there's an old saying in medicine that nobody's allowed to die before they get some roids. So you're having the other sort. I do not know if they have effects on the eyes. I don't know that. What does your doctor say?
Well, it's hard to get through because it's through the specialist, and of course they're so busy, it's hard to get a lot of questions out of them.
But did you speak to the specialist?
Yeah, I was in Newcastle yesterday and spoke to the specialist and then drove back to Kempsey. After the drive, I was, of course, very sore. But I've booked in today now to go through to have the injection, which is the epidural into the spine for it's the L4 and L5 and S1.
Look, I would insist upon getting an answer, but also from your GP. Do not underestimate your GP. Your GP knows so much about so many different things, you'll probably find you got more satisfaction there. Do you have a regular GP who knows you and your body?
Yes, I do, but he's gone away for 2 weeks on holidays. So I was looking for another question because we're in a small country town, and I didn't really trust any of the other doctors, as he's been my long-time doctor.
Good thing to stick with one person so nothing falls. Look, I don't think anything bad will happen in 2 weeks. I think you'll be perfectly safe.
And ask your specialist when you come and see me today. Thanks so much for the call, Terry.
Thank you.
No, thank you, guys.
Good on you, mate. Yeah.
And then with regard to the car knowing the speed limits and so forth in the local area, there's one performance car in Japan called the Nissan Skyline. They have the Godzilla, but then the Nissan Skyline is slightly more high performance. And it will give you its full performance only if the internal GPS tells it that it's on a recognised racetrack. thank you very much, Nick Profit, PROFFIT, for passing that on to us via the wonderful Twitter.
That's great. Rhino's calling in from Brisbane this morning. Hi, Rhino.
G'day, how are you guys?
Is that your real name, Rhino?
Yeah, it is.
Good. That's my question for you. What's your question for us?
I've got a question about a remote central locking in my car. I've noticed if sometimes you're a bit too far away for it to unlock, if you put it towards the remote, towards your head, it'll unlock. Just wondering why.
What you're doing is you're coupling the tiny, tiny antenna in the remote control-y thing, which is smaller than a box of matches, with your body. And then your body's acting as another antenna, and you've still got the same amount of power, but you're more efficiently radiating the power out because you've got a bigger antenna.
Okay.
So it's a body coupling.
Thanks so much for the call,
and
Rhino.
That's not dangerous?
No. It's non-ionizing radiation, never been proven to cause anything.
Just means that you're a superhero.
Without the Lycra.
With a name like Rhino, you would be. Thanks, Rhino.
Cheers.
Troy's calling in from Gawler this morning. Hi, Troy.
Hey, Jan.
Great. What's your question?
I'm actually in Melbourne. I'm a truck driver at the moment.
Oh, sorry.
Another truck driver. God bless you. And you pulled over. You deserve to get a Triple J magazine because you pulled over.
Everyone who drives safely gets a Triple J magazine. We'll get you details, Troy. Stay on the line for us after we hear your question.
Question or answer, yep.
Yep, as an outstanding question. I had a car accident a few years ago, and you know, you have a split second thought about, you know, what do I do, and it's sort of life flashing sort of type thing. The thing that went through my head about being drunk drivers survive crashes, I've heard that, and I just sort of went limp, but I held onto the steering wheel, so much so that the steering wheel actually folded around the column and smashed the indicator off. And all that happened to me was an old WV panel van. All that happened to me was a bang knee, and I was fine.
Did you have a seatbelt on?
Yes, I did, and the passenger side wheel was actually pushed up against the firewall.
Wow.
Yes.
Very lucky.
The question was, electric cars, why can't they generate their own power whilst driving? I mean, they've got to charge up at a point, but why can't they generate their own power while they're driving? Why can't they have their generating system?
They can, but suppose you've got an electric car which can either turn motion into electricity or electricity into motion, right? So in this case, you've got the electric car, say, up to 80 k's on or 100 k's on a highway. You then switch it into the mode where it will start turning motion into electricity. Sure, it will do that. It will take the motion of the front wheels or the back wheels and turn that into electricity, but the car will slow down. You can't have the car going at the same speed and make electricity. It's either the car slows down or you make electricity. You can't have both. Or you can if you go down a hill. I've got a hybrid car and I can make electricity going down a hill or every time I slow down.
So there is an actual switch that it will allow the car to do that?
It's built into the system so you don't have to think about it. There are various hybrids around. The Japanese are very advanced on it and the Germans are catching up and will overtake them shortly, I think.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for the call, Troy.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
And thank you for pulling over as well.
Oh,
and stay on the line for us, Troy. We'll give you a present for being a safe driver.
Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. That's been fun. Wow, that was all driving questions, Dr. Carl, as we got behind the wheel on Triple J.
Yes,
a lot of questions about driving and drivers.
Yes, and people being safe and caring about other people. And so I want you all this time, I will whinge now, I will give a positive one. I want you all to go out there and next time you're at a traffic light, use a thing called the handbrake or the foot brake or both and not roll onto the car behind you.
And don't text and drive.
And don't text and drive.
And think about all the other people on the road.
But that wasn't
as well
positive.
As
I didn't say, all I said was negative stuff. What can I say?
It's positive Thursday.
It's positive. It's positive Thursday. Be positive.
Shall we see you next week for Positive Thursday?
Yes, thank you.
And don't forget to check out the Triple J website. There's a bunch of hack stories for your eyes as well. Just make sure that you're looking at them when you've pulled over and you're not driving your car. Triplej.net.au is the place to go as we get behind the wheel all this week.